Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thanks for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Greg Norris, my eldest son. Greg is the president of T&G Auction, and T&G buys properties at trustee sales and fixes them and resells them. Greg, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much.
About how many properties have you successfully bought at trustee sales in the last, and how long have we been doing it now?
I think between 5 to 6 years, I think we're probably approaching 600 houses now.
Okay. And prior to that, we built a 93-house project. So I guess one of the questions I wanted to ask you was how important is a construction background to what you do?
I think it does give me an advantage. I think having the knowledge and the expertise in a lot of different areas of construction allows me to speak to contractors in a way that they know what I'm talking about, and I think I'm more likely to get the right price the first time.
Okay. Does it also help prevent some major mistakes in the field?
Yes, it definitely can, especially on older homes. The experience of knowing what it takes to fix an older home and what that costs does help us avoid problems in many cases, but not all.
Well, and that's one of the challenges of buying at the trustee sales. How often, what percentage would you say we actually get in to see what we're going to deal with prior to us actually having to buy it?
Probably close to zero.
Yeah, so it's almost always occupied. We're almost always not going to get in it. And yet, your repair estimates, just because the margins are so thin, have to be pretty accurate without ever having seen the property. So what in the world, how do you do that successfully?
We've developed a Excel sheet that has all the basic repairs on it that we can teach an amateur probably within a week to be able to fill in the sheet, and they can come up with a relatively accurate repair estimate. I always have to review them, but for the most part, it has been very successful.
Also, appraising a property, how many properties a day would you say that you have to appraise?
It really has changed because there are so few going to sale nowadays. But, I mean, there were days where I would have to appraise probably 65, 70 houses in a day. Now it's probably down to 5 to 7.
Okay. When do you feel the foreclosures or trustee sales were at their peak?
Probably, I'm not sure, but I think probably around 2009 to 10 would be my guess.
Okay. And how has the business changed since the peak? Are there as many participants, and are the big companies still buying a great percentage of what is being sold?
I would say the regulars right now are probably still purchasing 50 to 60% of what's sold. We still have what we call newbies coming in and overpaying for property pretty consistently. There is very low volume of anything being sold to third parties, but we have definitely seen a lot of the companies that were in existence in 2009 and 10 have fallen by the wayside and have not been able to sustain their business. It's gotten thinned out considerably, but it's still pretty tough.
When we win a bid, what is the process that happens directly after that?
In what regards?
When we win the bid at a trustee sale, how do we approach the occupant that's in the property? When do we confirm that they're in fact the former owner or a renter? And what do we do at that point?
Well, usually what we do is the following day we will serve them with a 3-day notice. And probably 50-50 right now, we're getting a call back from either the former owner or the tenant, and we're able to speak to them. it changes. You know, it seems like some years are better than others, right? This year has been pretty terrible. The evictions are taking longer. On average, I'd say probably 3 to 4 months is not uncommon for an eviction to take. And it seems like we're having a lot more fights and people doing even crazy things like taking us to jury trial. So it's definitely gotten a little more challenging. But that's basically how it begins. Just begins with a 3-day notice and hopefully having a conversation where we can get some idea of what type of a person that we're dealing with on the other side of it and how reasonable they are.
What percentage of the time would you say it's the former owner that's in the property?
Probably 70 to 75% of the time.
And are they harder to deal with than a tenant or easier?
They actually are. You know, the former owner typically has an attitude of entitlement and, hey, I paid for all this stuff in here, even though it's attached to the house and legally considered a fixture. Tenants usually don't have any such notions, and I found tenants to be much easier to deal with than former owners.
So 3 or 4 months passes. You just said you were at a, I was talking to you on the phone, you said you were at a lockout. Explain that process. Are people still physically in the house when that occurs most of the time?
No, most of the time by then they've conceded the fact that they need to move out, and most of the time at the very most they've left, you know, a lot of personal belongings behind. But it is, on occasion we do have someone who fights so hard that they don't even move out when the sheriff shows up to lock them out of the house and give us the writ of execution that the eviction is finally completed and we have the right to possess the home and get them out.
That has to be unpleasant, I'm sure.
Yes, it usually is.
I guess you've gotten accustomed to all of this. This is, you know, when we do training and people say, well, you know, I was thinking of really getting into trustee sales, and you just go, well, it's not for everybody, you know. It's not like it has big margins and it has a lot of expertise, and the chances of you making money versus losing money, you know, when you just give it a shot, it's probably not so good. So
it's not. And, you know, I'd say probably one of the things I've learned over the 5 or 6 years I've been doing this is just to learn to be a lot softer with people. I think when I started out, I was very hardcore trying to make sure that I was protecting the company and was probably a little overbearing. And I have found through your advice and through experimentation that taken the road of being willing to be beat up sometimes by people and just trying to be nice to everyone is a better road. It definitely keeps my blood pressure lower, and it seems to end up with as good or better results than being harsh. So,
yeah, there's a book I read a long time ago, because I could be very combative as well. And there's a book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and there was a chapter in there talked about avoiding the acute angle. And I was a master at creating acute angles until I read that chapter. And after that, I thought, I'm going to make it a game. Every time I see a confrontation, I'm going to see if I can't soften it and make it something that just goes away. And it definitely made my career a lot better. So
it definitely is more enjoyable than being in a very high pressure, high, you know, tension environment with people. That's for sure.
Yeah. And you just, as the quantity of homes that you're dealing with, you really have to find a way for that not to happen. You know, that headbutting experience, you can't have that happen very often.
Yes.
When we end up with a property, it's all vacant now. I guess I wanted to, since we've been doing this 5 or 6 years, the market sometimes changes in those time frames. Are we doing, let's say, higher end repairs than we were at the beginning, or is that necessary at this point to sell a house?
It has definitely changed over time. You know, when we first began, there were so many REOs that buyers really had the pick of the litter of what they wanted. So to flip a home, and really sell something to an end user, they had a choice of buying an REO and fixing it up themselves or buying something more towards the top end. And that margin was pretty narrow, if you remember right. We were having trouble having houses appraised for much more than $10,000 that had been completely gutted, new kitchens, granite, everything, and compared to the REO. And people definitely wanted our house, but we just weren't getting much reward for it. So in the beginning, we definitely tried to do heavy repairs to try to attract a buyer, and that was working. I'd say right now, with the way the market is, probably somewhere in the middle. You know, occasionally we will do it heavier. Just depends on the type of product. Usually an upper-end home, you know, if it has substandard upgrades and you want to move it. It also depends on the area. You know, if it's in the desert, you probably want to have higher-end upgrades depending on the neighborhood. But for the most part right now, there's very little inventory. If you have a clean house, it doesn't have to have granite and all the bells and whistles to sell, just as long as it's in good condition and somebody doesn't have to come in and put a lot of money in themselves. That alone is usually appreciated.
What are a few of the absolute things that you do every time that we buy a property? Or is there any?
It's pretty rare that we don't have to paint the house and at least replace the carpet. A lot of times the tile is savable. The yards are almost always need of work. But, you know, paint, carpet, and yards are usually the definite bare minimum items on every house.
Do you still offer the property for sale prior to any repairs being done?
We do. Although I'd have to say the ones that have a little heavier repairs, I have been waiting a little longer than I had in the past. The market is really just not on fire right now, which is odd. The inventory is very low in most places, 1 to 2 months of inventory based off of pending to actives. But there doesn't seem to be a huge rush, nor do we seem to be experiencing big price appreciation, which would be normal for a market with such low inventory. It's an odd market.
What do you attribute that to?
You know, maybe it's buyers hoping that the interest rate's going to go a little lower again. Could be that, you know, the prices have risen to the point where it's not quite seen as an investment anymore or a great price. So even though the inventory is dropping, and their opportunity to get something they want is less, I just don't think that mindset has switched over to, oh, we'll just wait for a better deal, to, oh my gosh, I better get it now, otherwise the price is going to go up another 5% in a couple months. That just hasn't happened yet. It seems like it should be happening soon, though, with how low the inventory levels are and what we know about how many foreclosures are coming, which is almost non-existent.
Usually there's a progression of rationalization. So let's say in 2010 you have a house for sale and there's a lot of REOs and you've got to cherry out that house. It's got to be great. By the time you get to the peak of a market, like 05, you could have a mobile home on a dirt road and people would make an offer on it. So are there any products that you have found that people are still shying away from? So let's pick anything on leased land or a one-bedroom condo or something that's a little bit odd inventory-wise. Are you still paying a price when you get involved with that, thinking it's going to sell and then it doesn't?
I think there's certain inventory that we've learned to avoid. Like lease land is definitely more challenged. It's just not worth it. I mean, they do sell, but it usually takes longer, and the amount of grief that you go through is just not worthwhile. I do tend to want to avoid condos, especially in the desert area. They just don't seem to resell well. HOAs are usually high, especially when they're on golf courses, and they're not the most attractive buy for a lot of people, especially if they're not big golfers. So, but, you know, for the most part, a lot of it has to do with whether or not I can find comps. If I can find comps that give me a good feeling that it will sell, that's more important to me than anything. So I'd say a much bigger indicator is whether or not I can find comparable sales that shows me that there is a market and people willing to buy that product.
So recent activity is real important.
Yes.
When you list a property, how close to the final selling price is that initial listing price, do you think?
Oh, I'd say we're probably 99%. It's very rare that it goes up or down much. We usually nail whatever price that we begin with in most cases.
And while it's being listed, now you've gone through several years of this now. Was there times when we had price aggression? Let's go back to 2012, maybe early 2013, when you picked a listing price. Sometimes there was an immediate reaction. There was a lot of offers, and you got more than we were asking. Was that about the time frame that was going on?
That would happen occasionally, but at the trustee sales, you're dealing with pretty intelligent investors, at least some of them.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about when we sold, when we went to sell them, when did we have a reaction that where we had multiple offers from the buyers?
Not a lot.
Okay.
Really, most of the time, because of the market as being as intelligent as it is these days, the trustee sale buyers are anticipating that increase in price. Everyone's watching and watching the market and seeing how it's moving up. It's very hard in an up market to appraise a price to appraise a property for the value that you can actually comp it for at that moment when the prices are moving up. Trustee sale buyers are usually building into the price what they anticipate to sell it for in 3 or 4 months. And if it's moving up strong, they're usually going off of pendings and seeing where the pendings are going, and that's what they will appraise it for. And that's probably the biggest indicator of what it will likely sell for at the trustee sale, especially a strongly up-moving market.
When we have a 3 or 4 month eviction in 2015, the direction of price for a typical product is unchanged?
Right now it's unchanged. There have been times where long evictions were almost celebrated.
Yeah, that's right.
When the market's moving the wrong way, obviously that would be something that you would need to build into the formula. But right now it's pretty flat. There's really not a lot of upward movement. There's a couple of homes that we have that have moved up in price, but we probably have just as many that have moved down a little bit as well.
At any one time, how many properties are we usually dealing with? Somewhere between 2 and 3 dozen?
30 to 40 is normal.
Okay. How often do you monitor the price that we're asking to see if that's still the right number?
I'd say it changes in the market. When we're having strong up or down markets, I watch it a little more closely. When we're in a pretty flat market like it is right now, I'm probably reviewing the price we have it listed for every 2 to 3 months. It changes.
Okay. Other than putting the property in the MLS, what else do we do to market the property?
Nothing. That's the only thing that we do. I mean, we do put signs on the home, but we have found over time that the sign calls are usually just looky-loos, and they're really very poor leads.
It's interesting, honestly. I mean, that's true, because that's why I asked you in the beginning, how many houses have we done? So all the things that you might have thought would work, and probably if you were listing somebody in the public's house, would be an expected thing. How many open houses are we going to have, and how many flyers are we going to have? And at the end of the day, the only tool that really is of very good value is price it to where it's going to sell.
Correct. Having an attractive house that somebody wants to buy and having it priced correctly is your best tool by far. I mean, I'd say it's 98% of it. All the other stuff is the 2% that makes almost no difference.
And takes up lots of time.
And money.
Yeah. The one thing we do, and let's talk a little bit about staging. What is your feeling of the effect of staging?
I think staging is very effective at getting people off their couch and actually coming to see your home. When most people look for homes these days on Realtor.com or Zillow or something like that, and Zillow and Realtor.com grab pictures and data from the MLS so that they can advertise their site, And one of the most important things of, you know, getting someone to come see your home is having something that looks attractive to them. So even though we only do kitchens and bathrooms and, you know, try to make it colorful and bright and, you know, the pictures are even adjusted for the light levels to make them look more attractive, all of those pictures gives a person a very good feel for what the home is actually going to look like, and I believe helps give them the motivation to get off their couch and actually go see a home, your home.
Yeah, I think that's we've figured out that that is the one of the necessary tiebreakers, and it's not that expensive, but it sure creates the needed traffic. And there's ways that you can monitor traffic. So I'm just curious how has that number changed in the last couple of years? Are people out and about looking at houses in typical numbers, or less or more?
I would say it's less. The two ways that I tracked was looking, the way in the past I had looked and tracked was you could see how many people had viewed your listing online through various websites. There's actually websites that will give you feedback on every single different website that has your property listed on it and who's watching it where. I have found that to be really not that helpful. I do watch probably a little more closely how many Supra showings that I have. We have a Supra box on every listing, and we're able to monitor how many people go in and out of the homes. I have found that to be a much better indicator of which home is likely to sell and when by the amount of people coming in and out of the home. That's usually a good sign that you're priced well and people want to come see it.
The typical buyer right now that we see, we get offers from, what percentage of those people are paying cash at this point?
It's pretty low. If I had to guess a percentage, it's probably 3 to 5, maybe.
Okay. And what loan are they typically getting? Are they getting an FHA or a more conventional loan with a bigger down?
FHA has definitely become dominant. I'd say it's probably 85% FHA at this point.
And that's due to the price range in the county that we deal in mostly?
I think it might be more because in the last couple of years, especially when the hedge funds were here, an FHA buyer really had no shot. I mean, if you weren't a conventional offer or a cash buyer, when the hedge funds were here, your offer was almost worthless or a very high conventional down. It's changed in that that's almost the only buyer out there. There's just not a whole lot of conventional buyers buying or cash buyers in my, at least on my listings, and that's just typically what's occurring.
So we sort of have a backlog of FHA buyers that were sort of unsatisfied when they really wanted to maybe buy a house a year or two ago.
I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
Sure.
When we go into escrow, and I know there's a series of things that you try to do to make sure we don't have a fallout. If we do have a fallout, or you look at an offer and say, I don't think this is going to fly, what usually is the cause of you saying this is not an escrow I want to go into? Is it the credit score or the ratio of their debt, or what's the couple of key factors to be aware of?
Well, we cross-qualify, which is basically I have a lender that I work closely with that I attempt to, persuade people to use her. Basically, she looks at the file. She's an expert at looking at loans. She knows a lot more about it than I do, and she will look at their FICO score. She'll look at their credit history, and if there's anything in their past that would keep them from getting a loan. And she basically just looks at the file and tries to determine whether or not she could get that loan past an underwriter. And that's really what saves us from entering into escrows that will fail. Ever since we've implemented that process, our percentage of closings to entering into escrow has gotten much, much better and saved us a lot of grief.
Greg, we're out of time. Great interview. Thank you very much for taking time and talking with us today.
Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.